Have not all men eyes, have not all men hands, organs, dimensions, senses, affections, passions, are not all men fed with the same food, hurt with the same weapons, subject to the same diseases, healed by the same means, warmed and cooled by the same summer and winter as you are? If you prick them, do they not bleed? If you tickle them, do they not laugh? If you poison them, do they not die? To summarize, the consciousness of the second ring covers blood relations and those upon whom particular affections are lavished, the mother, father, husband, wife, and child. These are accepted as parts of self, and the work of unification has been inaugurated, for while in the first ring these are five separate people, in the second ring they are included as MEM, bears of the one in whom the realization of their proximity has been established. When realization increases to the point where it includes the stranger without the gate, the spirit of friendship is born. A friend is one to whom we are related by consciousness rather than by blood. Pythagoras declared his friend to be his alter ego, his other self. At another time he stated friendship to be that condition in which one soul existed in two bodies, thereby elevating this relationship far above that of the ties of blood. Until realization reaches the third plane, friendship is impossible, because up to that point egotism is so dominant a motive that man's love for himself precludes all other affections. When realization annihilates the substances of the second ring and flows through into its enlarged field of expression, the tribal, later the national, spirit is evolved. A certain clannishness is manifested, for though the great world without is still excluded, nevertheless the sense of inclusiveness has been increased to take in those having a similar origin or living in close proximity. Having one leader, the tribe is simply an enlarged family, the chief or head symbolizing the father, for nearly all tribal forms of government are patriarchies. Eventually the tribe grows into the nation and there is born a curious mental attitude termed patriotism. Patriotism is merely an accentuated egotism which embraces the members of the tribe or nation to which the egotist himself belongs. Fundamentally it is based upon the belief that that of which the individual is a part, is, like himself, incapable of wrong. Consequently all examination of motive is regarded as superfluous. And the attitude that I and mine arc right and you and yours arc wrong is an attitude to be assumed and maintained at all costs. Long regarded as a virtue, patriotism will yet demonstrate itself to be a most pernicious attitude, for it can be and has been controlled and directionalized by personal interest, frequently to tragic ends. To affirm that an individual can do no wrong merely because he is of the same blood or clan as oneself, and to defend him because of such relationship is a fault, and contributes to his own moral delinquency and the destruction of the nation. There can be but one true patriotism, namely, patriotism to principle. But those dwelling in the consciousness of the third ring are as yet unaware of principle, and to them there tribe or nation is elevated to a position approximating deity. Yet with all his faults and blindness, the one who has attained to this degree of consciousness has gone far in the mastery of diversity, for his realization has increased until in part, at least, it has included an entire nation within die range of common interest. True, it has not yet learned to understand the structure and consciousness of nations, but this comes later. Here is the man who will die for his friend but cannot possibly understand his friend, for he serves not the consciousness of his. Annihilation of the sense of diversity 109. 110 lecturesonancientphilosophy. Friend, but rather his own preconceived standard of friendship. It may therefore be said, regardless of the actual integrity of the friend himself, that he dies nor for his friend but for his own concept of friendship. Man creates standards and later serves them as though they were divine creations, only to discover ultimately that deity had no hand in their fashioning. When the sage, seated in the midst of his rings of consciousness, elevates his realization to the sphere of the fourth ring, he passes from national to racial concerns. His ever increasing vista of understanding has revealed to him that the inhabitants of Earth are not merely isolated individuals nor even families and tribes, but rather can be classified under a few racial headings. It naturally follows that the mind establishes comparisons between the relative superiority of these races, also that the unillumined man should upon some pretext or other elevate the particular race of which he is a part to the position of superiority. If at the time of making the comparison his own nation occupies a position that is evidently inferior, he will philosophize upon their past glory or dream of their future ascendancy. Such an individual, however, continues to annihilate diversity, for in his analysis of peoples he no longer conceives of a billion and a half separate units but rather of a score of major segments, each composed of a vast number of lesser parts. From this attitude is born the racial spirit. We have chosen peoples and rejected peoples, racial gods, racial attitudes, and racial prejudices. Practically all civilized humanity is now in the throes of racial upheaval. The white man regards the black man as his inferior. Throughout the southern states, there is a definite color line drawn, which in some cases is incalculably unjust. There are schools in the United States. W. Here the pupils, encouraged by parents of puerile intelligence, have risen in a body and refused to admit the enrollment of colored children in their classes. While the white man views W. with contempt the black man, he considers with ever increasing alarm the machinations of the yellow man and the brown man. The lot of the red man apparently gives his Hivite brother little concern, for the latter feels that the work of extermination goes on apace. It is interesting to note at this stage the effort man makes not to be inclusive, for he seems to fear lest he should learn to love everything so much that he would have nothing left to hate. The question of sex equality becomes an issue during this period, and man has undertaken to determine whether woman really has the consciousness of a human being or whether she must depend upon man for rational intelligence. We SEC people everywhere who function upon this level of the fourth ring. They are called broad-minded, charitable citizens with progressive ideas. In many instances they foster foreign misgivings and believe in spreading the white man's light through out the dark and gloomy areas where the benighted non-Aryans reside. As Charles Erskine Scott Wood has noted, they discuss the holy war of Christendom and the unholy wars of the barbarians. One, they are more or less patronizing and condescending in their attitudes, feeling that by reason of their exalted status, they can well afford to be nice to their less fortunate younger brothers. Such people do not compare favorably with those few outstanding examples of intelligence produced by the world. If contrasted, however, with the primitive attitudes of the first ring, their progress is apparent. These people are trying to be big, but are bound to their littleness by precedent, environment, education, and fear. They dread to be on the unpopular side of any issue, yet sincerely wish that the popular side might occasionally be the right side. In ancient astrology, the fourth plane, that of the sun, was regarded as a middle point dividing the inferior or sub solar planets from the superior orbs moving outside the solar orbit. It naturally follows that when the realization has been lifted to the consciousness of the fifth circle, it should concern itself with greater verities. He who has reached this stage is capable of understanding the immortal words of Thomas Paine: "The world is my country, and to do good is my religion." The only defect in the slogan is the lack of definite understanding regarding the word good. The ideal is an excellent one, but the annihilation of the sense of diversity. 111. 112 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Its fulfillment is very difficult, for good can never be discovered. As long as the individual considers himself its true criterion, having thus pierced all the rings of consciousness to the fifth, realization has now reached that point where it begins to recognize the magnitude of the plan behind manifesting life. The concerns of nations and the politics of men then recede into insignificance, for from this comparatively exalted level of realization, humanity is viewed as a single unit. At this stage, there also comes the realization that human life is not the only rational manifestation of deity. Consciousness and intelligence are recognized in the lower kingdoms, and brotherhood extends to all corners of the earth, including all races and species without distinction. The vastness of the whole and the infinitesimal smallness of the part we call the world begins to be apparent. Upon this level, philosophy begins, that is, philosophy as apart from the individualistic codes established by primitive man, with no thought for that which was beyond the vista of his own comprehension. The principles of justice emerge from the codes of primitive retribution. Power becomes thoughtful of weakness and might, considerate of that which is less than itself. From the code of the survival of the fittest comes the realization that it is possible to make fit the unfit, that all may survive. The subtler virtues are elevated above the grosser propensities, and grace and beauty are regarded as superior to strength. Although truth is still but a concept, the increasing realization gives the sense of magnitude which overawes and causes the half-awakened faculties to glimpse the immeasurable that lies beyond. The sage within is coming into himself, the sky wanderer is casting off the bonds which bind him to earth, the voices of the seven spheres are calling, and something far down in the depths of man's nature is tugging at its fetters, crying out for freedom to join in the ecstatic dance of life. Having raised himself to the contemplation of the world and its mice, Terry, the sage finds himself one with the world and its mice. Terry, his heart merged with the heart of the world, his mind teeming with the thoughts of the world, his whole being filled with